Storyworthy Media, the best in story-driven content.
Hello, Jupiter Diego here. You're listening to Storyworthy.
Welcome to the Storyworthy Podcast. Here are your hosts, Christine Blackburn and Hannes Finn.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm here with
Hannes Finney, and we're coming to you from Madison, Wisconsin, the Berkeley, California of the Midwest.
That's very funny. You know, I was thinking to myself, obviously tonight's title, Tripping in Berkeley, has the place right in the title. And so I said, of course we're going to come from Berkeley.
Oh, no, no,
and then, Hannes Finney, you throw me a curveball, and we're back in the goddamn Midwest.
That's right. But Madison is the kind of place, it's like Berkeley, it's very, very liberal. And but it's completely surrounded by farms, so it's
it truly is
weird because you know, like I remember taking a class with a guy who was an actual communist. The teacher was an actual communist,
and so he said that in the beginning of class. Welcome to
just all knew he was a communist. He's a member of the Communist Party, and he's teaching some history class. And then I'm thinking, if I drive for 15 minutes, I'll be on a farm with a guy with a gun.
Mm.
Oh, and I tell you what, I don't like, he wouldn't talk like that. He's in Wisconsin. He'd be like, well, oh, yeah,
even
I don't
here,
care for those communists.
You know, even in Berkeley, I mean, that's still very isolated. I was looking up some facts about Berkeley, and there's only about 115,000 people there.
Yeah.
So it's not like a huge city or anything. It's a small town,
yeah.
Really.
How far is it from San Francisco?
It's, you know? How far is it from San Francisco?
An hour, I think.
I don't know, maybe an hour. How far? 45 minutes, something like that?
Yeah.
So it's just a small, like, kind of an alcove of San Francisco, but it's its own place.
Yeah, and it's its own, and it's a very liberal. You know, it's funny because it's the home of the University of California.
Mm-hmm. It's the oldest. It's the oldest campus.
But it's like
in the system.
Like I never, hearing about the University of California, I didn't realize that that meant the same thing as Berkeley when I was growing up.
Mm-hmm.
Like you'd hear about Berkeley, and you'd hear about the Southern University of California, and you're like, oh, they're the same place.
Right, right.
It's like
I
didn't quite get.
Well,
that
you
that
know, I used to do that,
that
with Penn State University. You know, you think of Penn State as the name of the – because I grew up in Pennsylvania, of course, and the town of Penn State is, you know, the town of State College.
Oh, you know what?
My
you're
point
right.
Is yeah, I
wait
a minute,
there is, but
that.
Just in my defense, College Station, I believe, is where Texas A&M is.
You get no defense because we're not even in the same state right now.
I think what's important is that communism is a threat to this country.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have a guest tonight here, and he's a smart guy, Hannes. Here's how I know.
He's got a tweed jacket.
If you go,
that's how you know.
He has leather patches on his jacket.
No, he doesn't, but he does have the brown buttons that look like
leather.
Listen,
Jupiter Diego, he's here, and he's a writer, and he's really interesting. He sent me his bio. He sent me a story, and he's just fascinating. He reminds me a little bit of a Dylan Brody. But if you could even kick it up a notch. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, sure. Just
no, you don't.
Just
do you know what I'm saying?
Sure, I do.
Yeah, he's a great storyteller. That's why, obviously, we want him here on Storyworthy.
Yeah.
But Jupiter brings forth the topic, Tripping in Berkeley.
Nice.
And I read the story. And usually I don't read the stories beforehand. But
that's
I was
true.
Intrigued. And I did read the story. And it is about tripping in Berkeley. But it's also about, you know, kind of meditation.
We are being in an ashram.
We're
getting a whole subgenre of tripping stories. People on acid. People get so drunk that they knock their heads on a curb and get a brain injury. We've got like a little – we could do – you know what? That'll be our next best of. Best of brain injury or best of brain alteration.
Yeah.
Something
That's
like not, that.
You know, we've had three neuroscientists on this show, Hannes. I was counting a couple
three.
Of days ago.
Well,
three. Is that enough? Should we have more?
You know, nothing moves the podcast needle like neuroscience. The hell with lesbians. It's all about neuroscience.
Let's talk about Berkeley. Here's what I learned about Berkeley.
I like this.
Andrew Stephen, listen up. On September 2nd, 2014, that's just a year ago, the City Council of Berkeley approved a measure to provide free medical marijuana to low-income patients.
So when do you move?
Listen, if Sideshow Network opened up a division in Berkeley, maybe I would go.
Yeah, I mean,
but
think
probably
how much
not.
Money that would save you.
Probably not, and here's why. Berkeley, it does seem very forward-thinking. It does seem like a very intelligent town, an academic town.
Yes.
But outside of that, like you said, like outside of Madison, not a lot going on.
And
I like entertainment choices. No, I'm just saying. That's why one of the reasons why I love L.A. is every night of the week there's something big going on. Not a small thing, but large things going on.
You know, that is true. And yet I think to myself as I sit and watch Netflix again, I'm like, I could be doing this anywhere. I don't need – you know, I'm like within – I live within 5 miles of two of the major entertainment studios of the world, Universal and Warner Brothers. Yeah. And I don't live that far from, you know, Hollywood Bowl. And it's like, you know,
you
I'm going to
do
watch
a lot of things, though.
I do a fair amount of
and
things.
And at the end of the day, you can only sit on one couch with one remote control with one beer in your hand. You know what I mean?
Well, first of all – no, I can sit on one couch, but I can have the television. I can also have my tablet and watch two different things, and I can have two beers.
I see. And play Words with Friends with a couple of people, and you and Sherry can text each other across the couch.
Right, exactly. No,
that's pathetic.
It really is quite sad. I text to her. I say, this is pathetic. And she says, you spelled pathetic wrong.
Here's what else I learned. On September 18th, 2012, Berkeley became what may be the first city in the U.S. to officially proclaim a day recognizing bisexuals. And it is now known as Celebrate Bisexuality Day. How do you like that? September 23rd. What else are you doing in September?
Well, apparently I'm going to be giving some guy a hand job. So who knew?
So I think
see, now this
cool.
is where I get see, because I'm a pretty liberal guy, and it's like you know, you hear about these crazy people. They're like, you're trying to, you know, shove the, you know, homosexual agenda. It's like, you know, the fact that homosexuals on a television show isn't promoting the agenda, but then you're like, literally, they're ordering. This is to me, it's almost a step too far. Like you're literally ordering me to celebrate.
Well, that's not true.
Don't celebrate.
That's
don't
not
order.
True. That's like saying, you know, Yom Kippur. You don't celebrate. We don't celebrate that, but it's on the calendar.
Bisexual Yom Kippur. Now we are talking.
Now we're talking about a feast.
Well, yeah, it's true. I guess they're not. Well, that's yeah.
You know, Berkeley also, in the fall of 2011, the nationwide Occupy Wall Street movement came to Berkeley. It was at the University of California and also at the Civic Center Park. So they had two encampments in Berkeley. They double-timed it. You know what I mean?
There's a lot of unprotected sex going on in both those places. I'm not saying that's a bad thing.
Well, listen, in between 1967 and 1969, right, that's when Berkeley really got put on the map.
Yeah.
And I was just reading about it. And what I thought was interesting is there was a huge overlap between the hippie movement and the radical left.
Yeah, you were telling me this. Now tell me the – because hippies originally were –
well, they were in San Francisco. They kind of spilled over the bay from San Francisco.
But they weren't political.
Into
hippies didn't start out political.
No, no, they didn't. That was more of the academia.
Yeah.
So there was kind of a couple of different things going on.
Because we think of hippies as like, you know, politically active and liberal, but they didn't start out that way. They were more of a social.
Yeah.
They were anti the way you're forced to be in society, not about politics per se.
Mm-hmm.
That was their that was their thing, but I think the important thing is that everyone there had really good weed.
Well, you know the Telegraph, what was it called? Telegraph Avenue. That was the focal point.
Yeah.
And I guess that's where all the protests were. And is that near Haight-Ashbury? No. Different. That different.
We're
different
getting
location.
We're getting signals. That's not Haight-Ashbury is
waving
in
wildly.
San Francisco.
That's right.
Specifically
proper.
Yeah,
that's
and
right.
And Telegraph
course.
Is in.
Of course.
Telegraph Hill. I wonder. I'll have to
Telegraph
look that
Hill
up.
Is in San Francisco proper.
Okay, that's where I'm getting mixed
by,
up.
By like
my
Pacific
head.
Heights.
Right. Right.
Okay,
Pacific Heights. Isn't that where Michael Keaton was a terrible tenant?
Not like Michael Heaton. Michael Keaton.
What did
Michael
I say?
You said Heaton.
I meant to say Keaton.
And he was
Michael
with...
Heaton is Patricia Heaton's brother. Patricia Heaton was the wife of Ray Romano on Everybody Loves Raymond.
See, it all comes around.
It all comes around. She, by the way, very conservative.
Patricia Heaton
extremely...
is not only... I knew that because when I was a Christian for a minute and a half in the early aughts,
sure,
she went to my church. And she told a joke that I remember, and I'm going to share it with you now.
Okay.
She said she was down. She was like, it was like a sermon. I mean, Patricia Heaton was doing the thing, right? And she was talking about being at the 99-cent store and how people were so surprised to see her at the 99-cent store. And she said, just because I'm on television, you think I want to spend more on paper towels. And I thought that was pretty funny.
That's pretty good.
And when you're in a church, it's funnier.
You know, that's kind of like the music in a church. It's like, you know, like, yeah, we got a really rockin' band. They're only rocking because they're in a church singing about Jesus.
Right.
If you put them in a nightclub at night, it's not so rockin'.
Well, the thing with those Christian bands, and that was kind of my hook, was part of that. I really dug the bands. And you know what they're doing is it's just rock and roll about love. They're love songs.
Yeah.
But they put Jesus in for girl.
Yeah, exactly.
Or guy.
Here's, I remember, okay, you had your daughter, you did some naming thing. I forget what it was.
I don't remember either.
By the way, this was some super hip Hollywood church in an old theater on Hollywood Boulevard. And they had four, like, they were introducing the babies into the church. And their name, all the names of the babies were like Alabama, Apple, Tablecloth
and Banjo
and Schmucknider. And it was like there wasn't a Bob or a Jill in the whole fucking group. It's like
you
all
know,
these
honest,
babies had names.
There's not a Bob or a Jill in the United States. So, you know what I mean?
No, somewhere there's a people. You know, I take the advice of Jack Donaghy on 30 Rock. Think of English kings and queens when you're naming your children.
Mm. Interesting. Elizabeth.
We're all over the place.
George.
George, exactly.
I got you.
By the way, we went to Patricia Heaton only because I mispronounced Michael Keaton. So this is truly obscure.
And who else was in that movie, Pacific Heights? That was
Matthew Modine.
But with from 9 to 5, what was her name? It was Dakota. No.
Yeah, I don't remember who the woman was, who the wife was.
Who was in 9 to 5? Melissa. No.
Jane
Griffith.
Fonda.
No.
Melanie Griffith.
Yeah, Melanie Griffith was there with
Matthew
Michael
Modine.
Keaton.
Always played the guy that, you know, technically he's the good guy in the story, but really you hope that the villain kills him.
Yeah, because
he's
so perfect.
Fucking irritating.
No, he's perfect, though. That's the thing. He's good looking. He's good looking to men. He's good looking to women.
I think he's fit, but not too fit. I want to slap him.
The thing about Berkeley, this is where the liberal gets a little crazy. The Measure D soda tax was approved by Berkeley voters on November 4th, 2014, the first such tax in the United States. Taxing soda, come on.
Yeah, that is, you know, with my Diet Pepsi dependency, that is not something that I can.
You could never move to Berkeley.
See, now, okay, look at it. Look at this. See what they did? They give you free pot.
Right.
And then
they
tax the soda, which you're
going
to be sucking in because they're trying to. Oh,
they know exactly what they're doing.
You know what? I'm going to Fox News. I can't take it anymore.
All right, you guys. We have a great storyteller here tonight, Jupiter Diego. But before he comes on, I did want to thank you guys specifically for the emails that have been coming in.
Yes.
Honest, we've had a lot of nice emails.
Right.
And then also emails that just flat out bash. You know
bash,
what I mean?
We
haters
had one
gonna hate.
That we don't have to go into, but it's like it was a perfect example of how people listen for what they want to hear.
Mm.
It's like this guy, it's like I said something, he heard the first half of the sentence, decided he was offended, and stopped listening.
Mm.
And didn't get to the end of the sentence.
Yeah.
And I was going to write him back, and I went, life's too fucking short.
I asked
I did. I was
I
like,
asked you to write him back.
Yeah.
I said, you should write this guy back.
Yeah,
man.
I thought of it, and I thought, what is the point?
Well, the point is just to say, I'm not a racist. You didn't hear the rest of what I said.
No,
I just feel like it's setting it straight sometimes. When an email could take you 30 seconds, you could set the record straight.
Oh,
and even if he fires back, so what? You
no,
said
here's
piece.
What I – okay, but here's what I don't believe. I don't believe for a second that this guy is going to actually read the email and hear it and be set straight.
I disagree. You have more power than you think. How do you like that?
Do I? You know who has a lot of power? Jews. Sorry. I'm sorry. Okay. What's important is that you hear the second part of
the story where
I say, but I like them. They're good with money. Okay. All right. Things are going downhill fast.
Here's what you can do, folks. You can join us on Twitter, at Storyworthy. I always appreciate new Twitter followers and Instagram followers, at Storyworthy.
You see how we make
it simple across the board?
Right.
Storyworthypodcast.com.
I have an Instagram now, which means Instagram is about to go under.
Yeah, pretty much.
But I've set it up so that like I can – it puts me on my Facebook and my Twitter at the same time.
Mm.
So now I can put up photos of Harry Potter construction.
It is exciting, especially when you see The Simpsons behind it at
People
Universal.
Go fucking nuts for those Harry Potter photos. Nobody gives a shit what I put on Instagram. I put up a picture of the Harry Potter construction.
Yeah.
People go nuts.
Yeah.
Like 25, 30, 45 people love it and write, oh my God. They take the time to write, oh my God, I can't wait.
Well, why don't you write them back and say, why don't you follow us on Storyworthy? Do you know what I mean? iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud. We have it everywhere. We're free. You know that, right?
I do know that.
There's no money involved.
Oh, I am well aware of that. That little conundrum right there.
I also wanted to give a big shout out to our Patreon fans. Every month, yes, our Patreon is getting a little bit better, a little bit better with ongoing support. People drop us $2, $3, $4 a month, and you think, like, what's $4 a month? It's a dollar a show. That's what it is.
Right.
And
if you don't live in Berkeley and you're not paying a tax on soda, you can take $4 a month and give it to us.
Exactly. And listen, please head over to Amazon and purchase my book, Pit to LAX, My Storyworthy Life.
Yes.
It is available, the paperback, the Kindle, the audiobook. It's all
people
happening
around the world.
And I've had about 25 good reviews, and I'm happy about that. And also, join me at the Huffington Post. I've got a blog going. Three blogs are up, and that's exciting.
That is awesome.
Did you read my most recent article?
Yes.
You did not?
No, I didn't.
You know what it's called?
What's it called?
I Died and Went to Heaven, and it's called Air France Business Class. Thank you. You should look that up.
Air France.
All right, you guys, wherever you are, stick around, because Jupiter Diego is on his way here. Next time on Storyworthy, we have comedian Murray Valeriano.
And I'll be talking about the time I met a beetle.
That's next time on Storyworthy.
Hannes, check it out. We have a new sponsor called BoxyCharm, and they are a beauty subscription box.
A beauty subscription box. That's fantastic. I have no idea what the phrase beauty subscription box means.
Well, that is three funny words, isn't it? But here's what happens. They send you, BoxyCharm sends you every month full-size products ranging from like cosmetics and hair care, skin care. And what they do is they send you $95 worth of products for only $21 a month, including free shipping.
Wow. Okay. And so, yeah, other companies apparently will only send you sample sizes.
Right, no, this is all full-size stuff, like popular brands. Your fiancé would love this sort of thing, Hannes. It's like Christmas every month.
Okay, it's a whole thing that I wasn't aware of. So it says here it's $21 a month with free shipping, no long-term commitment, and you can cancel at any time.
Exactly.
That I understand.
Exactly. It's perfect for treating yourself, your wife, your girlfriend, your fiancé, like I said. And if you're not sold already, you just search BoxyCharm on YouTube to access thousands of unboxing videos.
Unboxing videos.
It's a whole thing.
Apparently, it's a whole subgenre of videos that I was unaware of.
Check them out, you guys, over at BoxyCharm.com.
BoxyCharm.com.
Hannes, as you know, Storyworthy Media has started a new division, and it's all about social media.
Social media. We've needed this division for a long time. It's very important. We've got people working. I don't know what you're talking about. What does it mean exactly?
Come on, man. You know what I'm talking about. Social media and the value of it for an individual person and or a business. So
okay.
I've been doing this for so long. I got really good at it, and now I'm helping other people with their social media presence.
Okay, so instead of like haphazardly putting up a photograph of something that you ate or someplace that you went, it's like this is a planned media presence.
There's a strategy.
This is create strategy. That's the word. It's creating an idea and identity for your business.
Getting followers, exactly, and getting friends and all those things. And sometimes we do post pictures of their food.
Well, yeah, because food porn is very big on the internet.
The rates are very low, starting at just $300 per month per service.
Why, that's like $10 a day.
There you go. So email me, you guys, at info@storyworthymedia.com, and I'll be happy to send you a rate sheet.
Hey, it's Lee Keckner, and you're listening to Storyworthy. We're so happy you're here.
And we're back. We've left Madison, and we've driven far out to Rhineland, Wisconsin, and we're being threatened with guns.
That sounds horrible. That I don't want to go there. I don't know
where
it is.
You don't want to go to Rhinelander?
No, I don't.
You know, I've never actually... I mean, except for right now, I've never been to Rhinelander.
All right.
But it's one of those most fantastically named towns in Wisconsin. Rhinelander, Stout, Wauwatosa.
Wauwatosa?
Wauwatosa.
That sounds Indian, and the other ones sound like German. And
yes, they're all things in you know, all towns in Wisconsin are either German or Indian, except for a couple of French ones. You got Fond du Lac.
Mm-hmm.
And Wauwatosa, Menominee.
Menominee Falls.
Menominee Falls, exactly. Home of Johnson Controls.
Oh, my God.
This is
such a nightmare.
You know, Johnson
I'm
Controls
absolutely
really.
Asleep right now.
This is.
It's just really a nightmare. I deal with this all the time, Jupiter. I know. This is nothing, what I have to deal with.
It's horrible. Well, let's just get to Jupiter's story.
All right, you guys. Jupiter Diego is here right now. Jupiter is an author, a storyteller, a multimedia artist, and he's a thinker, Hannes.
He's a thinker?
A thinker.
A thinker. He's sitting, he's naked on a rock right now, and he's got his chin on his hand. He's like Rodin's the thinker.
Now, his current book, Growing Up with LSD, focuses on his experiences growing up in the turbulent 60s and 70s here in Los Angeles. So tonight we're talking about Berkeley, and we're going to talk about Los Angeles. You can find him at JupiterDiego.com and also on Twitter at JupiterDiego. So folks, wherever you are, put your hands together for Jupiter Diego.
The last time I took a hallucinogen was in Berkeley in the spring of 78. My girlfriend, Megan, was living in one of Cal's Northside student co-ops. One night, we decided to go see an Indian holy man named Muktananda. That afternoon, I rode my bike several miles to a ramshackle house on the south side of campus, where I was told magic mushrooms could be purchased. Led by tripping slackers through doorways of hanging beads, I entered the central meditation chamber surrounded by phosphorescent black light posters. I was introduced to a young man who went by the name of Neon. Neon asked me, did I bring the $4? He added that if I didn't have the $4, that was cool too. Either way. Was I ready to meet God, he wanted to know. I nodded my cautious assent, and he tiptoed to an old set of small drawers. Turning toward me on his outstretched palms, in reverent display, was one large and extremely beautiful, freshly harvested psilocybin mushroom. In my entire life, before or since that day, I have never seen such a beautiful piece of fungus. The cap of this mushroom was nearly 2 inches across, and the surface of it resembled crushed velvet, reflecting a rainbow of colors in splendid array. Now remember, this was before I ate the mushroom. After admiring this unusual specimen, I popped the whole thing in my mouth. Bicycled back to the north side of campus to meet up with Megan. We then walked the 3 miles to the ashram where Muktananda was set to appear. Although I was very interested in religion, spirituality, and philosophy, I was skeptical about the notion that any one man could possess the power to change another person's life merely through his presence and his spirit. The first thing that struck me once inside the ashram was a large glass display case with Muktananda's exhortations against smoking. In the display case were ashtrays with cigarette butts, open and sealed packs of cigarettes, hash pipes, crack pipes, joints, and bongs. His Holiness was adamantly opposed to them all. I turned my focus to the main meditation room, which was an ocean of yogis, acolytes, Sikhs, slackers, students and seekers awaiting the great man's appearance. Ragas played on sitars and drums, emanating from the small stage where 3 musicians played and swayed in a hypnotic trance. After an hour's wait, the lights dimmed, and the guru himself appeared in flowing white robes and a beard 2 feet long. A grand and yet hushed sense of awe pervaded the room. After a brief talk, the lights were reduced to near darkness as the great yogi began to slowly filter through the crowd. Every so often, he would pause and place his hand on the head of this man or that woman, and he would utter a strange few words in Sanskrit, Om Namah Shivaya. Naturally, I hoped that he would stop where I sat and place his hand on my head, too. But as the entheogen began to take effect, I realized that whether or not he physically touched me was irrelevant. I had already been touched in the most important way, merely by being in this intersection of time and place and being mindful of the moment. As we walked back to Megan's co-op house afterwards, I was feeling the full effect of the psilocybin. Like LSD, the sense of understanding the universe was profound and incontrovertible. But unlike LSD, it was a cleaner, less hectic experience. There was much less visual distortion, fewer auditory hallucinations, just the keen awareness and the conviction that I had been given an incredibly sacred gift, and that I must trust and hang on to every precious moment of it. When we arrived at Megan's house, it began to rain lightly, and it was the most delicious rain I had ever felt. We sat on a bench overlooking Berkeley's Strawberry Creek. After a time, I realized that my socks were soaking wet, and I asked Megan if she would be so kind as to go inside her house to get me a fresh pair. I was tripping heavily now, and the rain was coming down in brilliantly colored ribbons. I was 21 at the time, and she had just turned 18. During the few minutes she was gone, getting me those warm, dry socks, the great bells on Berkeley's Campanile bell tower began to strike midnight. And in those piercing 12 notes of compelling and vast insight, I experienced a certain ineffable knowledge. I became utterly certain and aware that this beautiful and intelligent girl would become my future wife. And so it did become, albeit many years later. I always wondered, what was the specific wellspring of this incontrovertible knowledge that we were to be married? I had known her barely a year, so it was not based on any long personal history with her. Was it something about the ashram experience? Perhaps the holy man inserted something into my mind, an ability to see the future? Could it be just the drug? Could any molecule possibly be that powerful? Or was it a combination of all of these factors? Or was it just a random and inexplicable glimpse into my future fate? All I know is there was a powerful tectonic convergence of insight and emotion, of being and awareness, that made these important truths self-evident. Megan would become my greatest friend, partner, lover, and most precious gift that any human could ask for. She possessed an authentic humility and modesty, coupled with breathtaking intelligence and a sense of humor and artistic sensibility to boot. She would go on to graduate at the very top of her class in physiology anatomy at UC Berkeley and was accepted to some of the best medical schools in the country, including Yale and UCLA. She ultimately chose UCLA, a terrific school, but she chose it to be with me. And both our mothers cried. Almost 40 years later, we're still together, and I look back on that day's experience with reverence and wonder.
That's so beautiful.
Nice.
That was amazing. Really, that's a lovely story. Now, have you tripped since? Or was that was the first time you'd done mushrooms like that?
That was the last time.
Interesting.
I took a hallucinogen, which, you know, I've done over 100 times, but...
But that was the last time? Why? If you were getting such insight, why did you...
Well, I'll tell you who I'm going to quote. Albert Hofmann.
I'm going to write it down.
Now, Albert Hofmann was the Swiss chemist who worked for Sandoz, which is a major pharmaceutical manufacturer. Uh-huh. And he is the one who, in the 1940s, discovered LSD, lysergic acid diethylamide tartrate 25. Now, he discovered that they were actually looking for something else. And it was so powerful. It was measured not in grams or milligrams, but micrograms. And it was so powerful that just by touching it, it seeped through his skin, and he tripped his brains out.
Oh,
this is a
gosh.
Famous day celebrated by acid heads around the world. I forget the
what's
day.
What's the day?
I don't know the
day. Is it bisexuality day? Is it near that?
Uh-huh.
I hope not.
And he rode his bicycle home, and then a couple of days later, but he went back, and they worked on it and worked on it, and they figured it out, and it was marketed for years by Sandoz to...
As what?
LSD.
It was called LSD. That was when
it was doctors would do it. It was supposed to be a way to expand your mind.
Well, that's what you're talking about.
Psychoanalysts, psychiatrists, psychologists,
but not
and
like,
researchers.
Oh, I'm going to take some. It's like a doctor would literally prescribe it to you. A psychiatrist would be like, you know, who was famous for, you probably know this, who loved LSD.
Timothy
Leary. Psychiatrist? Cary Grant.
Cary Grant was a big advocate.
He was a big advocate of LSD.
Really?
He would sit with his psychologist or psychiatrist, and he would take LSD and be like, I'm expanding my mind. I would love to, if there were footage of carrying out, it's like, this is fantastic.
Yeah.
I'm tripping my balls off.
Well, I'm going to look into that. No, I think that's fabulous.
It is. It's just he's the most, he was a huge health nut. He looked great well into his 60s. He was like a juicer. He would like just juice everything. That's all he ate, so he was the guy. So, LSD started out. Well, I think marijuana was also medicinal. So was cocaine at some point. It gives you pep. And then it became illicit after that.
So Albert Hofmann was a devoted advocate of LSD to the end of his life. He lived to be 100. He just died a few years ago.
Hmm.
But at some point, I forget exactly how old, I believe in his 90s, in an interview, they asked him, Dr. Hofmann, do you still take
LSD?
He said, I don't need to anymore. Hmm. And they said, well, why is that? He said, because I know her. That was the exact quote. Because I know her.
Yeah, so he could draw upon what he already learned.
Exactly. And that's what I felt. I had been taking LSD, psilocybin, mescaline from the time I was 14 until I was 21.
Where did you grow up?
In Los Angeles.
Okay. And so your parents were where? When you're 14, dropping acid, where are your folks?
Obviously not there enough.
Yeah. They weren't. Okay. So did you have brothers and sisters?
I had one very older brother.
I see.
Yeah,
so you were kind of alone and doing your own thing.
Yeah, I would say that's about
it. Now, this
right.
night you're talking about, though, it was a mushroom. It wasn't LSD.
It was a psilocybin mushroom.
And what does psilocybin mean?
Well, psilocybin is the active ingredient in magic mushrooms, the psilocybin mushrooms. It's a close chemical cousin to LSD. And it is now, by the way, the subject of extensive, very legitimate research in the United States at Johns Hopkins University, at UCLA, and other major centers for helping people overcome addictions and other mental
because
illness.
Because it opens more parts of your brain to education. Is that what you're saying?
It has to be done in a controlled environment with proper guidance. It has to be done legitimately. It's not like recreational use is going to cure you of alcoholism or cigarettes or some other problem.
But LSD could cure you in a certain setting. That's what you believe.
Well, there's a lot of research to substantiate that. The reason that we
I believe you.
The reason we had this dead zone of no research is that during the Johnson administration, LSD was made a Schedule I substance, and all research was closed down because Congress was too afraid even to look at it. It's like, don't give me the facts. I want to be blind.
It's so frustrating. It's just like the marijuana battle now that we're winning, thank goodness. Mm-hmm. But it's very just hearing you talk, because I smoke marijuana frequently every day. And so I feel...
Frequently every day?
But it completely, it goes from night to day. Like my clarity of things and having a keen awareness of what's going on and staying on task and things like that. So like you're talking about LSD, that's what marijuana does to me. Mm-hmm. But there's no spacey part attached to it for me. At least the kind I'm smoking. There's no, I don't see colors in the rain or anything like that.
Does anybody hallucinate on
marijuana?
No, I don't
think so,
right?
Absolutely, yes.
You can hallucinate on marijuana.
THC.
Listen, you're eating a donut right now. I'm thinking you can hallucinate on that.
Andrew Stephen is over there agreeing, absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah, man.
Hallucinate on marijuana.
Well, psilocybin is not as radical an agent as LSD is. The auditory and visual hallucinations are much more subdued.
Here's what I don't care for. I've only done mushrooms once in my life, and the reason why I didn't care for it and I'm not doing it again, albeit laughing harder than I've ever laughed in my life, mm-hmm. was because it gave me the feeling of my feet were off the ground. Do you know what I mean? Like I felt
interesting.
I am not in control. And that really scared me. So you don't mind that feeling?
I stopped taking it decades ago because I don't like feeling completely out of control.
Right, okay.
No, I don't.
Yeah, that's
not
what keeps me from even trying drugs is I don't want to be out of control.
Or drinking alcohol, too.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
But anything. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I'm just not. I don't. Mm-hmm. I mean, the funny thing is, if I were out of control, I'd probably do nothing. But, I'm still it's like, nope, the idea, it doesn't appeal to me.
You.
It does
yeah.
not appeal to me.
Well, I do believe, Hannes, that every adult of sane and sound mind, I won't say an obligation, although I really almost want to use that, or I almost want to go that far, a moral obligation to oneself to try psilocybin or LSD once.
Oh, interesting. And how would you advise people to do that? Like go out to the desert via Jim Morrison or go, what's safe place? What do you recommend? I wouldn't recommend a casino or an amusement park because you'll lose your fucking mind.
Too much stimulation.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Or a concert.
Here's what Timothy Leary believed. This is one of his main theses was, he called it set and setting. You need to be in the right mindset, and you need to be in the right physical setting. Now, if you can also be with a guide, somebody who has done this before, or your therapist, or somebody who loves you
and
that
trust.
You trust, and there is not too much external stimulation, preferably in a safe place that you know and are comfortable with. I mean, these are all very important factors.
Is the other person, should they be tripping too, or just one of you is tripping?
I'm not an expert. Even.
Come on, Jupiter. You sound like an expert.
Well, I'll tell you what Charles Manson used to do.
I mean, what do you hear? Well,
that's good. Wait a minute. I saw an episode of Mad Men once where they went tripping, and the guy who was, there was one, the guy who was in charge was not tripping. So if it was on television, it must be true. So I'm saying there should be a guy, one person,
designated driver.
I saw that episode.
Mm. Yeah.
I loved it.
That was a good episode.
You know, I'll tell you, just look at the really nefarious dark side. Okay, just for a second. Charles Manson, what he would do with his followers, he would take a very small dose, like a 1/10 adequate dose, and everybody else would get a very big dose.
Now, were they taking, do you think, like blotter papers or what?
Blotter acid, probably.
You were talking about the strength of it and how it's just a tiny little drop is How do you even control that, I wonder?
Well, back, you know, in Berkeley in the 60s, there was this man named Owsley who also did the sound setup for the Grateful Dead. And he was genius. And Owsley acid was famous for its purity and its strength. And that was a drop in a sugar cube. That's what Timothy Leary and John...
A drop in a sugar cube.
Yeah.
Wow.
A tiny drop.
Wow.
And that was, you know, several hundred micrograms, which is... huge.
Okay. So what did you graduate from in Berkeley? Did you graduate from the school?
I did. I have a degree in environmental sciences.
And what did you do for the rest of the last couple of decades? What have you been doing? What was your business?
I'm a multimedia artist. Mm-hmm. I'm a writer. And what I love above all else is being a storyteller.
Yeah. You're a wonderful storyteller.
Thank you.
And you've been able to make a living. Or are you riding on the coattails of Megan? Just throw it out right here. Tell us, Jupiter.
I'm rich, and I have a wife who's absolutely wonderful.
Is she a doctor?
She is a doctor.
And what kind of doctor is she?
She's a pediatrician.
Was she tripping that night as hard as you were, or no? She's never taken any LSD.
Never.
Boy, did she take a chance with you.
No kidding.
What a handful. What a handful you are. A pediatrician.
And I love her so much.
You are so lucky, and she's so lucky. I think that's very beautiful.
So what, we just had our 30th wedding.
I was going to say, how long the next year?
That's
fantastic.
Years.
That's amazing.
All right, so let me ask you, have you been back to an ashram or any kind of like a dojo or a sauna?
Have you been in a laundromat that's really overheated?
You know, I was in a laundromat where everything was white. No, I'll tell you honestly, on Robertson Boulevard in Los Angeles.
Yeah, Beverly Hills.
There is the Guru Ram Dass ashram, which is the Sikh Dharma religion. Mm-hmm. Their ashram is where the yogis and the Sikhs go. And I went there for a few years.
Now, a couple of years, that's a lot.
Several years.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah.
I've gone to some kind of hippy-dippy yoga stuff in Silver Lake where I live. And they play like Krishna Das music, which I love. And but at the end of the day, I don't know how much people are there just for show and to show each other, like especially the women, super beautiful women in tiny little outfits, and
a couple of very
like specific men who kind of like know what's going on. Like they're looking around like, yeah, man, I know exactly where to be. You know what I mean? There seems to be like a setup and a taking, and not as holy as you might want to go in and believe. Do you know what I mean? Do you think that's accurate at all?
Well, that can especially... Well,
that there's posers in the religious era? Oh, I'm shocked.
Yes. Shocked.
Okay.
I'm shocked to find there is gambling going on in here.
Yeah.
Well, I guess I just think, like, if you really, you know, meditating and yoga, you do that on your own. You know what I mean? You could, of course, do it in a group setting can be another stimulation, but
Well, to me, that's kind of like the guy who writes a screenplay at Starbucks.
Starbucks, yeah. Who is
it's
writing?
It's like, why do you need to be seen writing a screenplay? Just write the screenplay. You don't, it's like, look at me, I'm
so
writing a screenplay.
Funny. That is so accurate. That's exactly what I'm talking about, Hannes. That is accurate. That's very funny. Wait, what are you not?
I agree. No, I agree completely.
What's your real name?
You want to be seen? Really?
Jupiter, what's your real name? It can't be Jupiter Diego. It can't be.
It's David Temianka.
Is that right? I like the name David Temianka.
Jupiter Diego sounds like a character in a Wachowski movie. The people who made The Matrix.
Mm.
And what was that? What was that movie, Jupiter Ascending? Did you go see that just because it had your name in it?
I avoided it for that reason.
I play tennis with a guy named Jupiter. He's Filipino. Well, there you go. We've all learned something.
But his name is actually Jupiter.
His name is Jupiter. Yeah, that's his name.
Yeah.
I think it makes a great nom de plume.
I like it. And I like that word, too. Whatever that was. So you
that
just said.
Pen name in French.
Pen name.
Oh, a pen name. All right. Mm-hmm. All right. So, like, you know, as a storyteller and as a writer, like, you know, obviously I've got all sorts of people coming in here and recording Storyworthy with us, comedians, and we have, you know, writers. But you are sort of like a little bit of a different kind of a person. You seem like such an artist. So when you go out into the world every day, do you see stories unfolding in front of you like... You know, the waitress brought my bacon over, and I had said I'd like it well done. However, it was not, you know. I mean, do you see, like, a narrative going on?
Absolutely not. What I actually, here's what I believe. All real literature comes from personal experience.
Yeah.
So, and I say this in the preface to my book, when people say, oh, you know, most of your stories are first person. Does that mean they're all completely true? I say, Absolutely not. Most of it is true, which implies some of it's not true. I'm not a journalist. I'm not interested in the aseptic documentation of fact. I'm interested in getting inside your soul. I want to see and feel what you feel. I want to move the human spirit. If I need to embellish a little bit or leave a couple of things out or maybe even add a couple of things to get the message through,
yeah,
I give myself all of that liberty and more. Having said all of that, yeah, it's mostly all true.
No, I understand that because my book, Pit to LAX, My Story-Worthy Life, is like that. I mean, of course, everything's completely true, but I changed names of people and I changed a couple of little small things to make it pop a little better.
So I draw, yes, I do draw, mostly from my own personal experience. I also have strong opinions on many things, mm-hmm. big surprise. And so there are also essays on the website as well.
Yeah, absolutely. What? Tell me real quick about what's the This Is Actually Happening. What is that show?
This Is Actually Happening is an iTunes podcast.
Okay.
Just like Storyworthy. They picked up my story, 10 Fingers, No Gun, which was about my colorful arrest 20 years ago.
What were you arrested for?
Let's see. What wasn't I arrested for?
It's a shorter list of what you weren't arrested for.
Well, drunk driving, under the influence of cocaine, stolen vehicle, and evading police.
20 years ago, though. So you're better. You're cleaned up. You feel, you know. Are you still doing any drugs?
I drink a little
you
bit.
You drink, yeah.
I drink a little
all
bit.
All right.
Maybe
all right.
Once a year I'll take a puff of pot while I'm skiing, yeah.
Yeah. While you're skiing?
Yeah.
What kind of
That's
skiing do you like to do?
Downhill skiing.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Every ski mountain in the world has a little area that you go smoke pot in. Like, everybody knows that.
Well, Mammoth has several of those.
Yeah, Mammoth, they're all over the mountain.
Yeah,
right.
You have to know which chairlifts to get on.
Yeah, you just kind of look for the little poofs of smoke coming out of the trees.
It's like 6, 9, 14.
Yeah. Hey, listen, you want to play some Shotgun Storyworthy?
Sure I do.
Music can only mean one thing. It's time for Shotgun Storyworthy.
The game where our storyteller spins the Storyworthy Wheel of Truth and tells a true one-minute story about the topic it lands on.
So everybody, say it with me.
Spin that wheel!
Vacation. Well, I'll tell you what I'm gonna do. I haven't been to New Zealand in 4 decades. Okay, 5 decades. And I'm going to fly with my oldest son to Auckland this summer. And we're going to spend a couple of weeks traveling all over the country, particularly in the north part of the North Island. When I was a little boy, I got to live there for a summer, go to school, while my dad and his orchestra toured all over the country, and I lived with a family. We were front page news when we landed. It was amazing.
Wow, that's a great story.
Yeah.
So you're talking about going on vacation, and when you were a kid, you lived there?
For a little while.
So you come from a lot of art then?
Oh, yes.
Tell me your father was, what did he play in the
orchestra? What kind of band was it?
Yeah, an orchestra.
Big band or orchestra?
My father was a famous conductor and violinist. He was a soloist. He had his own orchestra.
How fantastic.
We had a nonstop trickle or flood at times of actors, painters, writers, mostly musicians come through the house.
So this is why when you're 14 years old and you want a trip on acid, your dad is off playing the violin somewhere else in the world. So there you are.
Well, I hasten to add that I never felt abandoned by my father.
You were.
I loved him very much. Like many artists, he was, you know, first and foremost into his thing and himself. But he was an incredible artist and a very compassionate human being.
How old was he when he passed away?
84.
That's good. Yeah,
okay. He was 50 when I was born.
Oh, wow. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
So you were only 31 when he passed. That's too bad.
something like that.
I think I just did bad math, but
yeah, but it's okay.
How many
I
kids?
Like bad
how
math.
Many kids do you have?
Two. I have two handsome and brilliant boys.
And do they like traveling with you?
Oh yes.
You must be a trip to travel with.
Oh,
man.
You bet. Yeah.
I bet.
Oh yeah.
I bet you're off the path.
And they've been all over the world now.
Yeah.
My younger one is learning Japanese. He's 14.
Fantastic.
And my older one is going to turn 18 in just a few days.
How wonderful!
And he's going to be studying at Virginia Tech.
How exciting!
In the fall.
So here you have.
There'll be a Hokie. Is he a Hokie?
That's right.
He
is a Hokie.
Look at me.
He
look
is officially a Hokie.
I'm walking out the door.
The door slams. Good night.
Drop the mic. Boom.
I'm out. Hey, listen, this has been a real treat to have you on. Your book, Growing Up with LSD, we can get that on Amazon?
Not just yet.
Okay, so Growing Up with LSD, how about can we get it at JupiterDiego.com?
You can hear each of the stories or read any of the stories and essays at JupiterDiego.com.
And you also have an excellent SoundCloud page. I checked that out.
Thank you.
Yes.
Well, when you hear any of the 23 right now stories on JupiterDiego.com, they are all
kick
SoundCloud.
You over to SoundCloud.
They're all SoundCloud links.
I know
yes.
that
makes
because
it very easy.
That's what I did.
I know. Because
SoundCloud is pretty good.
I know. Hey, you don't have to tell me, man.
No, I'm telling America.
What?
You're unbelievable.
I know. Listen,
I mean,
I'm sorry, what was that?
You're just beautiful.
I'm sorry, what?
Inside and out.
Ladies and gentlemen, this has been a lot of fun. Really, thank you so much, Jupiter. I really appreciate you coming on. And I'd like to thank everybody here at Sideshow Network, including Sean Merrick and, of course, Andrew Stephen. Thanks, Andrew.
He is beautiful inside and out.
Andrew is beautiful inside and out. And so is Maria Spertolozzi. Let's throw her name out there.
Yeah, by the way, I just looked on Instagram before I came here. Sideshow put up a video of her twerking. I'm not
that
kidding.
That I'd like to see. We should have vined that.
Oh, wait, that wasn't, never mind, that was somebody else.
And on behalf of John Thomas Griffith, you know, he wrote the theme song to Storyworthy. Follow
yes,
me.
Yes, I hear that he is beautiful outside but terrible inside.
I play tennis with him this week on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. How do you like that?
I'm really not impressed at all.
I'd also like to thank our storyteller tonight, Jupiter Diego. Thank you again for coming.
Thank you.
And of course, on behalf of you, Hannes Finney, my dear friend and
I'm changing my name to Saturn Fernandez.
My name is Christine Blackburn saying, make it a story worthy. You can follow me.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore. Because it's here. And it's funny. And I love you.